Welcome to the Coaching for Social Impact podcast. I'm Carolyn Mumby. Today, I'm delighted to talk to two brilliant women, Catherine McAdam and Catherine Collins, who run the inspiring and successful social enterprise, Coaching for Unpaid Carers. Welcome, Catherine Collins and Catherine McAdam. Thanks so much for joining us today. You run the groundbreaking social enterprise, Coaching for Unpaid Carers. And I know from your website that your vision is a world where no one need to give up what's important to them to care for someone else. And your mission is to coach unpaid carers to live a life they choose. The homepage of your website has a strong image of a tangled ball of wool that's slowly being spooled into a more coherent shape. Catherine Collins, can I start with you and ask you to say more about this image and what it represents?
This is something that we notice a lot with carers, is that sense of it being a big mess and they don't know what to do or where to go or what the next step is, and it feels really overwhelming and really difficult to navigate. And then leaving coaching, this feeling of like, okay, I can do it. I believe in myself. I believe in my abilities. I know what the next steps are. I know how to take it one step at a time, and more confidence that they can actually work towards goals for themselves, things that are important to them. So I think there's a big thing around coaching works so well with this particular client group who are often so overwhelmed and often as well spend so much of their time thinking about other people's needs, other people's goals as well. And you know, the longer you are a carer, the less and less you think about yourself often and what you want to do.
I wonder if you can just say a little bit more about what you mean by unpaid carers, Catherine M.
So unpaid carers, you know, is what it says on the tin. Basically, they're carers who are caring and not being paid for it, as distinct from, say, home carers or nurses or whatever, who are often referred to as carers. So unpaid carers, sometimes called family carers, are looking after family members normally, but not necessarily. It could be friends or neighbours. Anyone who, either because of their age or illness, disability, maybe an addiction, can't cope without that help. People who are doing this often alongside parenting, alongside, you know, paid jobs and other commitments.
I remember an article that you wrote, Catherine, and you were talking about also seeing the need for that kind of being with the client and that sort of sense of the emotional support. So you are bringing something very supportive and psychological, but that proactive, practical bit is what's so important and differentiates it from pure counselling.
You know, when people come to us for coaching, quite often they wouldn't pass the kind of standard test of readiness for coaching. But we don't necessarily apply that test, because for us, the whole purpose of coaching is to get them to that place where they can think clearly, where they can articulate goals, where they can even envisage something different to what they've got now. And so we do spend a lot of, probably a lot more time than coaches would normally, just allowing the person to sort of feel comfortable talking about themselves and talking about things that they may have never talked about with anyone before, because you know, it's upsetting. So we do place a lot more emphasis on that, just being there for them, allowing them to feel heard, to feel understood and validated as a starting point for then being able to build something that is meaningful and achievable for themselves, not as a carer. That's another important distinction, is we're not coaching people to be better carers, but coaching them to be themselves and live their own lives.
And that's making me think about this whole thing of coaching for social impact and how we might need to go out of existing paradigms, existing ways of thinking about people and the world. Because the systems we have currently often don't really support what's really needed.
So one of the things that we were thinking about in terms of was, you know, what's the difference between coaching for social impact and other types of coaching? And I think, you know, that's what we're talking about, which is that, you know, the language, the context, the kind of outcomes that people are looking for are often external, you know, about external things. So it's about profit, it's about performance, it's about delivery of certain goals or whatever. Whereas for us, it feels like, and obviously the person is key to that. It always is in coaching, because you don't get those profits and so on if the person that, you know, doing the work isn't sort of fully committed and doing the things that they're best fit place to do. But I guess it just sort of turns it on its head and says, no, the person, it's all about the person. And recognizing, you know, that is enough, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one of the things that we learned very quickly is that, you know, this whole idea of goals is a bit of a minefield, really, because people often come to coaching and you say, you know, what is it you want to get out of this? And they may come up with some really sensible sounding practical goal. But as you begin to work with them, you realize that that's a long way off. And may actually not be the thing that they really need or want. It may be the thing that they've been told or that they think they need or want. And so giving them the space and time to connect with their own gut instinct and feelings about what is right for them is so important, because often what happens is that they then realize that the thing that they came for was not the thing that was going to help them most. And in a lot of the article as well, is that often the outcome of the coaching is the creation of a set of goals. It's not the mm-hmm. beginning. It's the journey that gets you to the point where you are able to articulate and conceive of, you know, working towards something that is really meaningful, that is achievable for you and that's right for you, not something that somebody else is telling you to do, but something that is about you and your own sense of who you are and, you know, what you can contribute, all of those things. So I think us being able to rely on our own gut instincts is a really important part of that, being able to encourage other people to do the same. Catherine, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. And I suppose that, so we evaluate our work and we invest quite a lot of our time and energy in doing that, because we understand that it's really important for making a case for coaching. But one of the, you know, one of the things that really comes through in our evaluation is that whether someone has achieved the goal that they came in with or not is not the most important question or the most interesting result of the evaluation. What comes through most strongly and what I think is most interesting about that is that it's people's sense of themselves that has changed. There's a shift mm-hmm. in the way that they see themselves and the way that they conceive of what's possible for them. So it's things like increased self-esteem, mm-hmm. Increased self-confidence in their own ability to navigate the kind of problems that they're facing. And that's stuff, you know, we also check in with people, you know, 9 months to a year later. Those shifts in the way people experience themselves, they seem to really last, you know, way beyond whether they did or did not achieve their goal of going to the gym or whatever it was. You know, there's like something much deeper mm-hmm. and much more important, we feel, that happens in the process that is often missed out, I think, of a lot of the conversation around coaching, which can be, as Catherine says, very goal focused. Or maybe I should say has been historically, because I think there is a kind of shift in the coaching world more widely that's happening at the moment, which is quite exciting.
Definitely. And it's very exciting to recognize how that taking that different approach for coaching for social impact can then reverberate and feed back in to the coaching world. And that's kind of music to my ears in a way, in terms of working in a more integrated way with people and recognizing that people are not just either kind of dynamic go-getters who need to kind of go further in their career, or people who are often storied as kind of very much more helpless, as it were, you know, when working with them in a counselling way. So I love that idea of that kind of transitioning into that maybe more purposeful, practical way of being, having had a chance to kind of feel safe and get their bearings and build the relationship with you. And that level of insight about what is needed, I know it came out of your own experience as unpaid carers. So I wonder if you might just say a little bit about that and how that's informed your, if you like, your passion for the work that you're doing now.
So I was what we call a hidden carer. So somebody who has caring responsibilities but doesn't identify as a carer. So I became a carer for my for a partner when I was young. I was only I was at university, and I remember it as being a just incredibly difficult part of my life at that time. I felt very isolated, which is how lots of carers feel. And I also tried, I recognized I really needed support in managing things. I was struggling. I didn't feel like I was old enough to have this level of responsibility. And of course, you know, there are even children carers, people who are, you know, as young as we've heard sort of 7 and 8 who have some caring responsibilities, perhaps for an adult. So, you know, it gets kind of thrust upon you. And I think that's often what carers feel, is whatever age it is that it gets thrust upon you and suddenly you have this huge responsibility and no training or way of navigating it. And I did try and seek help at the time. I went to see my GP and I spoke to my university, and nobody used the word carer with me. Nobody told me about carers or sent me to a carer centre or anything. And in fact, there was very little support available. So I just sort of muddled through as best as I could, but finding it difficult. And then some years later, I was no longer a carer, but I was working in community settings, running community projects and things like that. And I came across a job at a carer's centre. And I thought, oh, this sounds interesting. And I started learning more about it. And I had this moment of like, oh, my God, that's what I was. that was me. And I never even realized it. So I was that was sort of my kind of journey into working on the other side, supporting carers, was running community projects. I ran a project for LGBTQ plus carers in Hackney, where I was living at the time, which was great, really a kind of interesting part of my work, and I really loved it. And I was running groups and offering support and training as a therapist and working as a therapist with carers as well. And felt really that offered a lot, and I felt really good about it. But I did notice that that sometimes what I was able to offer, which was mostly kind of emotional support, wasn't enough for some of the people that I was working with, because actually they needed some kind of more practical, something a bit more practical that wasn't someone telling them this is what you need to do, but actually just a more practical thinking space to sort out some really often quite complex real life problems. And that's where I met Catherine and started learning about the work that she was doing, coaching. And I thought, yeah, this is the thing, you know, this is the thing that sort of bridges that gap, and the rest is history, as they say.
Catherine M., you've also talked about carers losing a sense of their own kind of importance or significance as individuals in their own right. And I wonder if you might talk a little bit perhaps about that, but starting with your own journey into it.
So two things came together for me, basically, which is that in my day job, I was working for a local authority, and I was in charge of management leadership development. And at that time in the early 2000s, coaching was quite a new thing, and we were introducing coaching in the organisation. And so we were training our staff, including myself, to be internal coaches, as well as having people from outside come in. And I very quickly realised that this was something that I felt very, kind of motivated by, and I could see myself really being able to kind of focus on this. And one thing about me is that I actually have a hearing impairment, which makes a lot of things like big meetings and networking and stuff really hard. But one-to-one conversations are generally fine. And I just thought this is a place where I could really, work well. Coincidentally, at the same time, my mum, who's living on her own, was clearly not coping so well. We had space in our house, and I offered her the option of moving in with us, thinking she'd say no, but she said yes. So she moved in with me and my partner and my two kids, who were quite young at the time. And so that's kind of how it came about. And so I became what's now known as a sandwich carer, which is somebody who's caring, on both sides. So I was looking after my kids, but I was also looking after my mum. So now I was the squeezed middle. It started off fine, but as her dementia progressed, it became harder and harder, to the point where I was kind of on my knees. I'd given up my job, thinking that I would be able to work freelance from home. Ha ha, that never happened, really. It just altogether, it was just all too much. And so with luckily with the support of the rest of my family, we worked out that actually she needed to be somewhere else. But that decision was such a hard one, because she was part of our family then, and my kids were really fond of her. And the idea of having to say to them, actually, granny's going to go and live somewhere else with strangers, was really hard. And I did have some counselling at the time, but when the decision had been made, my mum moved into actually a very lovely care home near to one of my other sisters, and I then had a bit of time to kind of regroup, think about where I wanted to go with my coaching. And I just realised that I could have so done with some coaching, particularly around things like that difficult decision about, whether, when, how, where, all of the kind of complicated emotional and practical things to do with that decision about letting her, move on. And I just thought this would be such a good tool for that. So a newsletter came in to my inbox from my local carer centre in Hackney, saying, we're always looking for volunteers. I thought, yeah, I could do that. So I did. I set up a sort of weekly session where I was there offering coaching as a volunteer. And I did that for a number of years, until it became the work that I most enjoyed, that I found the most challenging and stimulating, and it that really, I felt I was really growing in this work as a coach, and I wanted to do more of it. And thanks to you, Carolyn, as you were my supervisor at the time, and the conversations that we had out of that, and meeting Catherine along the way, and realizing, it's not just me doing this, or not just me that's interested, the germ of the idea of thinking, well, we could actually make this into a proper thing, and make it more widely available than just me one morning a week.
I really remember those early times, Catherine, of you thinking and talking about this work. And I think this is really relevant to this whole field of coaching for social impact, this idea of a germ of an idea, maybe born out of our own experience or the experience of people close to us, and then connecting with other people to bring something else, to grow something else, which can really meet a wider need. And so how did you go about kind of growing your business together? So you're meeting through, I think, Hackney Carers Centre, one of you coming from the world of counselling, the other coming from the world of coaching, recognizing the need for something which is informed by both. Tell me what happened.
Yes, so we got together. We said let's get together and talk about this properly. I think we started off meeting in a coffee shop somewhere in East London, and we also brought with us two people that we had met in the coaching world. I was trained as a coach by then as well, and who were also interested in coaching for unpaid carers, Jacqueline and Angie. Who are still kind of involved in the organisation, but we kind of got together and thought, where on earth do we start? You know, we all had our own sort of self-employed businesses, but we hadn't had huge amounts of experience setting up this kind of business before. So we were really sort of muddling through and trying to work out what's the need and how should we do it, and most importantly, how are we going to get paid for it? You know, if it's going to be a proper business and have reach as many people as we wanted to and have the kind of impact we wanted to, it had to be work that we could be paid for, because we wanted it to be, you know, a main thing that we did rather than just a sideline thing. So that was a big question for us as well, is how we could be paid fairly for the work that we were doing, and what even paid fairly meant in the world of coaching, which is, as you know, is often very highly paid, so highly paid that most normal people can't access it at all, or at least can't access it regularly. So we spent quite a long time just trying to navigate through that, trying to figure out what it was. So we thought, let's just start where we know, and let's start in Hackney, and let's apply for some funding and start small and just do what we know. Let's go with our instincts around it, and trust that it will grow and develop in its own way, in the right way, in its own time. And I think that was very releasing for me, to just trust the process a bit more, and not have to have known everything and have everything figured out, which was quite overwhelming, and just let it be. And of course, you know, we've got our own stuff going on, and we wanted to be a carer. You know, we're carers. We're carers at our heart. So we wanted the work to be able to flex with other things going on in our life, and that was important for us. And it grew really organically from there, and really well.
And I guess just, reflecting on our own relationship, that's just an amazing gift that we've been given, is that we found each other and that we can work in this way, and it works, for us, and it works for carers and for our families as well.
And I'm wondering about this whole idea of network. So, you're working with people on an individual level. They're having chance to kind of see the wood for the trees. They're getting a better sense of themselves. They're feeling more empowered. They're identifying these goals, or goals are emerging from that process, and then they move forward with that, which is great. I wonder, is there anything about a network of support that they then tap into or are part of, either as peers or in some other way?
Everyone knows, you know, there's lots of research now and literature about the hugely negative impact of social isolation on people's health and life satisfaction and all these various other things. So, and we're really aware that carers are a very isolated group often. So we kind of hold connection as being quite important in our work, and we're all often talk to people about how connected they feel, or what kind of support they have around them. But in terms of how connected people are, it does depend person to person. I mean, there's lots of opportunities for connection through carers centres, which exist all over the country, and often do offer, you know, opportunities for carers to meet other people, which we know can be really helpful for social isolation, to meet with other people who get it. You know, that's one of the reasons that social isolation happens, is that people find that their friends and things just suddenly stop understanding their life experience and stop getting it, and they feel less close to people who just can't imagine what their life is like at that point. But yeah, it sort of varies quite a lot, I think, in terms of what people want and how they want to connect.
And I think that's also where we come in, so that even though somebody may be very isolated and unable to connect with people, either because they haven't got time or because they don't feel that the people around them understand, as Catherine says, being able to talk to us and feel understood, and that, that we can contribute to them that sense of, I'm part of, it's not just me. I'm not just going quietly mad here. This is real, and it's okay that I feel like this, and it's understandable that I feel like this. It may not be great, but I'm not alone, and there's other people out there. And sometimes when we run workshops, we do give people opportunities to connect with other carers, and that's often the thing that they come away saying, that was so great, when you put me in a breakout room with somebody else for 15 minutes, that's the first time I've been able to talk to somebody and unpack this thing, and we came up with some amazing solutions. And it's kind of like, well, you can, that is there, that you can offer that to each other, but you can also do it for yourself, and that feeds back into that whole kind of resourcefulness kind of thing. So
Yeah, lovely. And I guess that's one of the reasons for, in a way, taking an approach that works with a particular group of people or in a particular niche, because you do have that resonance between people, people talking to other people who get it, who really understand it. And I guess, I mean, there are two questions flying around in my mind. One of them is, therefore, what kind of coach could be a coach for unpaid carers?
yeah, so I actually think that having some lived experience of caring is really invaluable. But this does bring up an interesting question, I think, in coaching more generally, and it's relevant to therapy, counselling as well, is like, do you have to have lived experience of something in order to be able to be really present and and offer a really good session or service to somebody? I think is a kind of interesting wider question, which I don't necessarily have an answer for. But what we know from our, zooming in rather than out, is that people really like that we get it, because I think what's specific is because they so often feel that people don't get it, that this is a safe space because of that. So I think either having lived experience or having a lot of professional experience, like maybe if you worked at a carer centre or something like that, and you were working with carers day in, day out, that would also provide. So I think that's one. And I think the other one is that you have to be able to tolerate distress, because lots of the people that we work with they can get very distressed in sessions, and they often have very distressing lives. We've worked with people who are essentially housebound. They care for someone nearly 24 hours a day, that they can't leave the house, living in very difficult situations. So you have to have a certain capacity to sit with somebody in these really dark, difficult moments in their life, and to be able to hold that in yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And do you want to add to that, Catherine M? Because this feels really important.
Yeah, I think it is about, and I know this is, should be true of all coaches, is about, letting go of yourself and what you want to achieve as a coach, and really just being there for the other person. Not having an agenda, not wanting to, push them towards any particular way of working, or outcome, anything like that. It's you've got to be very comfortable with just, as Catherine says, being able to just be with the person, wherever they are, however dark and upsetting, chaotic, it is. And sometimes I've worked with people who want to talk about things that are clearly fantasy. They're not based in any kind of reality, but for them it's important that they can actually bring this and talk to somebody about it, and not be laughed at, not be made to feel stupid, you know, but to be able to, through being able to explore that, to then kind of get to a place where maybe something more realistic emerges.
So I wonder if you can both talk about two other things that I think are really important. What's your coaching approach? And also, do you have plans to train up other coaches from this community of unpaid carers?
So I think our coaching approach is quite integrative. So I think we incorporate different elements. And I think that is necessary. It's what Catherine was talking about before, is you can't really work with such a diverse client group with a really rigid sense of how you're going to work. You need to be able to draw on different tools depending on what somebody is bringing and what would be helpful for them. But it includes, you know, some things like positive psychology, like trying to help people reframe or see their strengths, and see possibilities rather than limitations. And we both have some background in cognitive behavioral coaching, so I think we use that sometimes as well, helping people think about the way that they're thinking about it and noticing how the way that they're thinking about it is impacting how they're feeling about it and what feels possible for them. We also use lots of other things. A lot of empathy, I think, is important, deep listening and kind of present moment awareness and noticing. And, you know, and lots of, we both have quite diverse backgrounds in what we bring to it as coaches.
So something that I've begun to explore a bit more recently is something called acceptance and commitments coaching.
Yes.
Which for me makes so much sense, because it kind of resonates with all of the things that we're trying to do. So it's about, you know, being in the moment, being present is your starting point. To be with your difficult feelings, which is really, really kind of essential. Using your values, knowing what's right for you, and using that as your compass, as your guide, in terms of the decisions and the choices that you make. And so this is a technique, a theory that emerged from therapy, that fits, I think, beautifully with coaching as well, particularly the type of coaching that we do. You know, it's about being able to accept that whatever it is, however bad it is, that is it, that's what you've got, and being able to be with it, but also then find a way through it that is right for you. I'm really enjoying, you know, exploring that, and sort of compassion focused approaches as well is another big sort of thing for me around really understanding what that means. So self-compassion as much as, or if not more than, compassion for others, because that's sort of taken for granted when you're a carer.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, recognizing how hard that can be.
It's so interesting, isn't it, how counselling and coaching are kind of in a way cross-fertilising each other, because I know it very much is acceptance and commitment therapy, so I'm quite excited that that's moving into coaching now. I wonder if you can address the other part of the question, which is, do you have aspirations to train or to kind of help develop other coaches?
We've just started this recently, and it's something that's quite exciting, is taking on associate coaches. So it's people who are already qualified coaches with lived experience of caring who can take on bits of work for us. But as part of that, we do offer kind of an introduction and a training around our sharing our experience, sharing our learned experience about working with this client group, and we're hoping to do that more. But we also have recently worked with a staff team, so slightly different context, worked with a staff team at a carers centre in West Sussex, who wanted to integrate a coaching approach into the way that they worked in at all levels. So it's not, they're not trained coaches, but it's, you know, the people who pick up the phone and the people who do the carers needs assessments and, you know, all those, all that staff team, recognizing the value of using a coaching approach in an integrated way throughout the organization, which has been really interesting, actually.
So I think definitely there's an area of work that we want to do more of, which is helping to train other people who work with carers to be able to use coaching approaches, and seeing how liberating that can be both to the carers, but also, as their staff said, to themselves.
I'd love to end with that question of, if you had unlimited resource for this work, what would you do?
I would just say I would make coaching free to carers and freely available.
Yeah, that's where I went to as well. You know, that coaching would be available to people who need it, regardless of their income or circumstances, or whether or not they fit that typical idea of what someone who's suitable for coaching would be. And that we as a field, you know, in terms of coaching, can expand our sense of what coaching is, how it benefits people, and how we do it.
Thanks for listening to the Coaching for Social Impact podcast. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for future episodes, and do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you, and we're always looking for guests. All our contact details are in the show notes.